वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भागवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी. This morning we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, first verse. First time. Okay, we'll try and chant this. I can't sing, so it's going to be tough. You have to bear with me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I can't do it. Janmadyasya ton vayaditaratascha. Somebody knows the tune? Okay, go.
Janmadyasya ton vayaditaratascha.
Yasya ton vayat itarachascha teshva vigyasvarat. O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. And he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. And by him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. So yesterday, we heard a lot of background information or facts pertaining to this first chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I believe, if I am not mistaken, that we read the first paragraph of the purport. So I'll start from the second paragraph, if you don't mind. Vasudev, or Lord Sri Krishna, is the cause of all causes. Everything that exists emanates from the Lord. How this is so is explained in later chapters of this work. And this is an essential part of our philosophical understanding. Especially, we chant every morning, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchid Ananda Vigraha Nadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes, the absolute truth. Everything that exists emanates from him is also very important. Yesterday, I met in person a real live Mayavadi. He was in the line of Shankaracharya from Kerala. I met him at one doctor's clinic. And, of course, the person who arranged our meeting, I had to go see the doctor, but he thought it would be nice for two representatives or two luminaries to get together and create some good energy. But I told him frankly, we know their philosophy and they know our philosophy. Their conclusion is there is no personality of Godhead, that everything is simply homogeneous Brahman. And our philosophy is that within Brahman there is Param Brahman, there is eternal variety in the kingdom of God, and whatever variety we experience here is a reflection of that variety. But anyway, he had us meet, and sure enough, ultimately the discussion got down to philosophy. He had some of his foreign students there, so he was sort of trying to show off. Lucky for me, he was not a very learned, although he had a big belly and Shiva Tilak and the whole profile, but he was not a very learned Shankarite. At least he didn't reveal himself to be such. So I explained the same idea from the Isha Upanishad, that God is Purnam, that he has everything, both within the creation and beyond. Therefore, because we find individuality, we find... Now, he drew a distinction between individuality and personality, which I couldn't understand. It was something... It was like... I don't know, he threw it out there as a kind of roadblock for my preaching. It didn't really mean anything. Individuality means personality. Otherwise, what is the distinction between one individual and another, if not personality traits? But anyway, I explained that God is the origin of both personal and impersonal. We accept the impersonal aspect of God, but our experience tells us that impersonal is subordinate to personal. Everything in the world, all the matter that we use, our cars, Of course, sometimes we give names to our cars and to our other things, but ultimately they're impersonal entities as far as clear consciousness is concerned. In one way you could argue everything, and this is a much deeper argument, but you could argue that everything comes from the supreme life. There's nothing dead in God, so ultimately even stone is alive. You can make that argument, but it's remote. It's not a relevant argument. So, I said that the impersonal is subordinate to the personal. And then I went on to explain how the Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled, that Vyasadeva had compiled everything and was still dissatisfied, and therefore his Guru Maharaj told him to write directly on the personality of Godhead. And then he tried to introduce Devi Bhagavat, that if you want to know about Krishna, you have to go to Devi Bhagavat. I said, well, frankly, if I want to know about you, I will ask you, not some other Devi. I will ask you. And if I want to know about Krishna, then I'll listen to what Krishna has to say. And, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says about himself, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, I am the source of everything. Matak parataram nanyat, there's no truth superior to me. Natvevaham jatu nasham, natvam neme janadipa, nachaiva nabhavishyama sarve vayam ataha puram. Arjuna, in the future we will also be individuals. It's not that at liberation we merge and become one. And in this way I tried to argue. Of course he just giggled, laughed, and said something to his disciples, but the fact is that Krishna is the cause of all causes. The personality Krishna. 5,000 years ago, he said the same thing to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra. It's a real place. The Bhagavad Gita, the Yudh, the war, it's not an allegory as some so-called scholars say it is, like the president, former president of India, with Krishna's name. I won't mention who he is, but you guessed. They all like to say that Bhagavad Gita is an allegory. It didn't really take place. The Kurukshetra means the body, the Pandavas are the five senses, blah, blah, blah. They just concoct. But the Bhagavad Gita says Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra. It doesn't say Dharmakshetra allegory, Kurukshetra allegory. It says it's a place of pilgrimage. And Krishna told Arjuna directly, I, Krishna, standing in front of you, I am the source of everything. And in so many ways he showed his universal form, not only to Arjuna, he showed it to the whole assembly of Kauravas in Hastinapur. Numerous occasions. He performed so many wonderful feats. He lifted Govardhan Hill with his little finger. Now the latest speculation coming from Mathura is that it wasn't Krishna that lifted Govardhan Hill, it was Radharani. That's coming out of one Gaudiya Math in Mathura. Anyway, these things are going on. This work is described by Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya as the spotless Purana. It's also described right here in the third or fourth verses, Amalam Puranam. spotless Purana because it contains the transcendental narration of the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. The history of Srimad Bhagavatam is very glorious. It was compiled by Sri Vyasadeva after he had attained maturity and transcendental knowledge. He wrote, in other words, of course, Vyasadeva is an empowered incarnation, but we see that such personalities act just like a jiva soul, or just like, let's say, an ordinary person. They don't... We know that Bhaktivinod Thakur was... He has various identities according to Gaur Ganadesh Deepika. We know that he is a Manjari. We also know that he is a incarnation of Brahma from different literatures. But in his lifetime he manifested different pastimes which might bewilder someone with little faith. And in his writing, although he developed the most wonderful Vaishnav literatures, which are for us Vedas, but there were books like Sri Krishna Samhita, which he had an earlier version of, which he later on re-edited himself. So in other words, there was a development of his writing. So you can say here that Vyasadeva, in his maturity, of course it's not that he didn't know the conclusion perfectly himself, but for our instruction, first of all, he compiled the Vedas, the Karmakanda, the Mahabharata, etc., etc., Vedanta Sutra. Then, finally, he composed Srimad Bhagavatam. So we understand that his deepest realizations went into compiling Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, it is a very special book. And it is practically, along with the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, these are the most important scriptures on this planet. He wrote this under the instructions of Sri Naradji, his spiritual master. Vyasadeva compiled all Vedic literatures containing the four divisions of the Vedas, the Vedanta Sutras or the Brahma Sutras, the Puranas, Mahabharata, and so on, but nevertheless he was not satisfied. His dissatisfaction was observed by his spiritual master, and thus Narada advised him to write on the transcendental activities of Lord Sri Krishna. These transcendental activities are described specifically in the 10th canto of this work, but in order to reach the very substance, one must proceed gradually by developing knowledge of the categories. So, a large subject is made up of small, small categories. Just like knowledge, the word knowledge. So there are many departments of knowledge. The Vedas themselves, Veda means knowledge. But there is the Dhanurveda, the Ayurveda, the this Veda, that Veda. They deal with different departments of knowledge. The overall subject is very big to understand the absolute truth. Atato Brahma Jigyasa Janmadiyasi Yataha. To understand the cause of all causes. That's very big. But there are categories. The substance is to understand that Krishna is Satyam Param Dhimahi. But in order to get the proper understanding, you can't jump over. You can't go directly. You have to understand who the personality of Krishna is. This example given of 10th canto is very important. This same gentleman started glorifying his own activities in Kerala, where they were doing Bhagavat Sapta. So I mentioned that this idea of Bhagavat Sapta was kind of a modern-day concoction, in the sense that it has become more of a professional thing. People, someone's a doctor, someone's a lawyer, someone's a businessman, and someone's a Bhagavat Sapta reader. He supports his family, etc., in the same way. Not really with a view to bring people to the highest stage of life. That's not his goal. The real essence of his doing Bhagavat Sapta is to get his roti, kapra, and makan. So, of course, he wanted to discuss that. He agreed with that, but this idea of discussing especially the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam because it is attractive. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you never read anything anywhere about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doing Bhagavat Sapta on 10th canto in public. The only time he would discuss the intimate pastimes of Krishna was with the most exalted souls. Very small number of people. For the rest of us, he prescribes sankirtan and tasty Krishna prasadam. And I think everybody would agree that those two items are more important on our mind than other things. So one has to go step by step. Now there's an exception here. We have our Krishna book, which does discuss 10th canto. It does not get into the deeper aspects of 10th canto, especially in the Gopi Gita. There are some very intimate activities there. Krishna book does not discuss that, but there is a tremendous amount of purport given. It is a summary study of the 10th canto, and there's so much purport that it's practically like going through the first 9 cantos. Otherwise, it is offensive to go directly to the 10th canto. One has to go step by step and understand the categories, who Krishna is, that he can do this Rasa-lila, who he is, what are his potencies, what is his relationship with other devotees. Even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are worshipping him. So that is the person we're talking about. And unless you understand that, your understanding of Gopi Gita will be totally tainted with your own lusty desires. It is natural that a philosophical mind wants to know about the origin of the creation. At night, he sees the stars in the sky, and he naturally speculates about their inhabitants, about Martians. People, this is something people have been stargazing since time immemorial. You go out at nighttime on a clear night, there's so many stars there, you can't help but think, what are those luminaries? What are those lights? What is there? You want to know the origin. It's not something that we've invented, but it's a natural inquiry. Such inquiries are natural for man because man has a developed consciousness which is higher than that of the animals. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. He says that Lord Sri Krishna is the origin of all creations. He is the only creator of the universe, but the destroyer. He is not only the creator of the universe, but the destroyer as well. The manifested cosmic nature is created at a certain period by the will of the Lord. It is maintained for some time and then it is annihilated by His will. Therefore, the supreme will is behind all cosmic activities. So these are things that we have to know. We are living our lives and going through good and bad times. We're getting reactions to our purva karma. Sometimes we're prosperous, we have a lot of money, and sometimes there is bankruptcy. We lose everything. We see this today. One of our close friends whose family was, you know, number three in India. They were very big. And now, by Krishna's arrangement, practically they're off the stock market and going down also. So there, sometimes we're healthy, sometimes we're diseased. Our life is full of so many ups and downs. Even if you chant Hare Krishna, you can get bewildered by the changes in your life. But this is providence. We cannot stop this. This is bound to act. The material world is like this. We should expect it. Good and bad reactions. What is important is not what is happening to us, but how we are able to keep our mind focused on Krishna. That is really what is important. Not the joy and the suffering that we go through. That's all temporary. But what is important is the eternal benefit that we achieve in the human form of life by thinking of Krishna and thinking of His instructions and thinking of Him as our Father, as our friend, as our Master, as our guide. He is our only hope. Krishna can pick us up out of this material world very quickly. We can be resituated in the kingdom of God, if we desire it, and if we perform a little austerity to prove our bona fide, that we are actually sincere, then Krishna is more anxious than we are to bring us back to home, back to Godhead. But let us understand who Krishna is. Let us not take Him for just an ordinary person who we consult whenever we have to. We should be living our lives totally according to Krishna. Everything we do, we should be thinking. Throughout the day, whatever you're doing, wherever you are, in your home, at your job, at the temple, in some social event, you should be thinking in your mind, is this activity I'm doing now pleasing to Krishna? Is it pleasing to my spiritual master? This is how you will become Krishna conscious, by constantly thinking of Krishna as the Supreme, not as some ordinary person. Of course, there are atheists of various categories who do not believe in a creator, but that is due to a poor fund of knowledge. The modern scientist, for example, has created space satellites. And by some arrangement or other, these satellites are thrown into outer space to fly for some time at the control of the scientist who is far away. Similarly, all the universes with innumerable stars and planets are controlled by the intelligence of the personality of Godhead. So this is not a very difficult thing to understand. Anyone, you don't have to be a great scholar, anyone of any background can understand. If A simple scientist can throw a rocket into the sky for some time. And we see that that scientist has so many defects, and he ultimately dies. But he has put some intelligence into creating that rocket. So let us see the result. In the world, there are so many spaceships, right from a mosquito to a large planet. There's so many things flying in the air. Whose intelligence has done this? It's a very easy thing to understand. Don't let your faith get shaken by foolish atheists, because understanding Krishna and serving Krishna, you can see right in your daily life, there are so many examples to reconfirm your faith in God. As you look around you, see everything, just like we were walking once in New York with Srila Prabhupada, and we were going along one area, in part of an industrial area, and there was a big building, and it said, alloyed steel. So Prabhupada looked up and said, they have alloyed steel, we have unalloyed love for Krishna. He was seeing everything in relationship to Krishna. Not only seeing, but talking also. We have to learn a new speak, a new way of speaking. We have to speak about Krishna. It's not brainwashing, because people are already brainwashed. Actually, they're brain dirty. And we are brainwashing by putting Krishna in the center. Similarly, all the universes with innumerable stars and planets are controlled by the intelligence of the personality of Godhead. In Vedic literatures, it is said that the absolute truth, personality of Godhead, is the chief amongst all living beings, all living personalities. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. There's one supreme eternal amongst all the other eternals, and he is maintaining everybody else. We cannot, despite our scientific advancement, we cannot create food. We cannot create the food, what do you call food? Whatever sustains us, what creates our blood. We cannot do this in our factory. We cannot, even we manufacture instant foods and people get bewildered and think, oh, we're manufacturing food. But no, we're just taking what is already there. Sometimes they mutate things. Nowadays you can get a cross between an apple and a pear and a peach and a plum, and you don't know what it originally was, but you know, they join things together so that, you know, it's a very big thing in Europe and America now, called the GM debate, because you get all these foods that are genetically manufactured. They change the chemical structure of the plant so that it'll grow in the middle of the winter with no sunlight or something like that. They try to, you know, increase the profit and decrease, like the Arda Kukuti Nyaya, you know, the half chicken philosophy. The man is getting he's getting golden eggs from his chicken, but he's having to feed the chicken, so he thinks, well, I'll minimize my costs and just accept the profit. So he cuts off the head of the chicken. I don't have to feed the chicken anymore. No head. But you cut off the head of the chicken and it's time for dinner. You know, it's dead. You also lose the back end. So they're trying to do all these things with nature, and it's a big controversy because there's a lot of people who object to it because they can't explain what's going to happen 5 years down the road after eating genetically manufactured food. They don't know what effect it's going to have on your body in 10 years. And, of course, one of the worst things they're doing is feeding cows to cows, or changing milk, changing the genetic structure of milk so that you can put it on the shelf and it won't go bad for 6 months because they changed some. But nature had a reason for making things the way nature made them. And by playing around with nature's arrangement, there's going to be trouble. So everything is controlled by the intelligence of Krishna, and we should leave it that way. And above Brahma, okay, in the Vedic literatures it is said that the absolute truth or personality of God is the chief amongst all living personalities. All living beings, beginning from the first created being, Brahma, down to the smallest ant, are individual living beings. And above Brahma, there are even other living beings with individual capacities. And the personality of Godhead is also a similar living being. And he is an individual, as are the other living beings. But the Supreme Lord, or the Supreme Living Being, has the greatest intelligence. And he possesses supermost inconceivable energies of all different varieties. So, in the Bhagavad Gita we find, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Ahastani Sahastanam, Apadani Chatushpadam Falguni Tatra Mahatam Jivo Jivasya Jivanam. It is a fact that more intelligent living beings tend to rule over less intelligent living beings. So the higher you go in the universal hierarchy, you're going to find more intelligent living beings. It's a fact anywhere, for the most part. There may be exceptions, but the general rule is that, and I've seen one translation also of this verse, the general rule is that one living being is food for another. So, this is a fact, and obviously, the most intelligent person is going to be the Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes. But the Supreme Lord of the Supreme Living Being has the greatest intelligence, and he possesses supermost inconceivable energies of all different varieties. If a man's brain cannot produce a space satellite, if a man's brain can produce a space satellite, one can very easily imagine how brains higher than man can produce similarly wonderful things which are far superior. The reasonable person will easily accept this argument, but there are stubborn atheists who would never agree. Srila Vyasadeva, however, at once accepts the Supreme Intelligence as the Parameshwar. He offers his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Intelligence addressed as the Para, or the Parameshwar, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that Parameshwar is Sri Krishna, as admitted in the Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures delivered by Sri Vyasadeva, and specifically in this Srimad Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that there is no other para-tattva, summum bonum, than himself. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva at once worships the para-tattva, Sri Krishna, whose transcendental activities are described in the 10th canto. So there's no question that Krishna manifests such opulence that his intelligence is incomparable. And as was explained yesterday, the reason why we should worship him is that he is the Supreme Person. We have to worship someone, we have to follow someone. Even the atheists have their heroes. They have their atheistic persons that they worship. So we have to worship someone. Better that we worship the most intelligent, important person, the Creator. And that will satisfy us, that will lead us to success in our lives in every way. You have to worship someone. Don't be stubborn. Don't be proud. Don't be arrogant. You cannot avoid being a servant. So here, you find someone else who is greater than Krishna. There's no other greater personality than Sri Krishna. And he's described in such a nice way in this Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'm sure we'll enjoy the next... How long does it take us? About 3 years to read Srimad Bhagavatam. If you attend class every day for the next 3 years, you will learn all about Sri Krishna. But here in this purport by Srila Prabhupada on the first verse, he gives a basic synopsis, a basic description. And the first essential point is the same in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the very same thing. Krishna Das Kaviraj, the first thing that he does in the first 18 verses is he establishes Sri Krishna Chaitanya as the original personality of Godhead. Otherwise, why should I read Bhagavad Gita? Why should I read Srimad Bhagavatam? Why should I have anything to do with these scriptures if they're written by an ordinary man? Either they're revealed by God and they have value in my life and I should follow them explicitly, or they're full of defects just like everybody else. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments?
Maharaj, as you said, we should go from first candle to 10th candle. 11th and 12th, we should not read.
Which one?
11th and 12th candle.
I personally think that... Anyway, I don't want to get involved in local... You should read on your own 11th... In Bombay, you should read on your own 11th canto and 12th. Of course you should read it. We're reading so many books. And we take it that Srila Prabhupada empowered Gopi Puranadana and His Holiness Sridayananda Maharaj to compile Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you read 11th and 12th canto, it's nothing but Vishwanath Chakravarti, Sridhar Swami, Baladev Vidyabhushana, Bhakti Siddhanta. Hardly there's a few paragraphs in there by Sridayananda Maharaj. You know, that someone may think, oh, it's not Prabhupada, you know. But practically it's all purports from our great acharyas. So I definitely think you should read it, because there's so much, especially in the 12th canto, there's so much on devotional service. It's dripping with bhakti.